Yo,
what's up, man?
Welcome back to another video, and this video is gonna be a bit different because I'm gonna tackle a very serious topic and a topic that means a lot to me specifically, me personally. So yeah, let's just get right into it. As you've seen from the title. Oh, by the way, disclaimer. I don't even know what to call this, but I'm gonna look weird because I'm looking at the screen here and not directly at you, which is like the camera. And this is because I'm recording on my iPad, and so I have to look at myself, because if I look at the camera, then I don't get any feedback. And, you know, so if I'm looking in like a weird direction, I'm looking at you, but forgive me. So yeah, this is a topic that I hold very dearly to me, and I think it's very important. And yeah, I'll start by saying the whole purpose of this video is to talk to my generation of people, like people who are age mates of mine, slightly older, slightly younger, because I feel like we suffer the same problems here. And as you've seen from the title again, it's, I feel like our connection to the divine, to what's above, what's behind this entire thing, what's behind reality and behind our existence, is severed. It's severely butchered. In our generation, it's basically non-existent. You know, when it comes to religion and spirituality and stuff, specifically religion, I feel like our parents and our parents' parents, they had that stuff on lock, man. They actually believed in it. And if they didn't, well, they practiced it diligently. And the difference between someone who really believes it and someone who religiously practices it, I don't think is that big. So, yeah, whether they truly believed in religious stuff or not, they practiced it like they did, and I think that puts them in the same book, in my opinion. So our parents and the generation that came before us, they were on lock with this stuff, but with us, we are completely severed from it. I feel like our generation is in such a weird gray spot, because it's just been getting progressively worse. And I feel like a lot of people who are my age, be it Christian, Muslim, Hindus, aren't really religious. They don't even fully believe in the faith that they have. And I'll reference some religions here, specifically Islam, because I'm like barely educated on Islam. And so if I get things wrong or, you know, say something that might be sound a bit offensive, I apologize beforehand. It's not my intention. I just try to get certain points across. So I don't want any crossfire from that. But still, I feel like our generation is very removed from faith and stuff. And I think this is very important to have some sort of connection with the divine, be it through any religion or any beliefs or practices, just a connection towards that which is beyond us. Because I think it's pretty obvious there's something behind all this, right? Something has created us, or at least there is something that is the reason behind our existence, something that orchestrates reality behind the scenes that we can't see. And we're just so removed from that. When you get removed from this, the only way to go is to, I guess, atheism. And no doubt to the atheist bros, but I think that's like one step away from complete nihilism. Nihilism being, I think I'm getting this right, the belief that this is all pointless, because there is no God. There is no creator. There is no reason for our existence. We're just an accident. We spark into existence, spark out of it. Nothing we do even matters. And nihilism can get you depressed heavy. I think it's like one of the top 10. I don't know, top 5. Might be tripping off of this. But I think I've seen something like that where it's like one of the top 10 reasons for depression. I don't know. Might be wrong. Again, don't quote me on this. A lot of the stuff I'm going to say here, I might be very inaccurate when it comes to the details. But I just want to act as the launching pad and send you off into the right trajectory so you can do further research on your own and figure things out on yourself, because that's really how you learn the best, and that's really how you cement beliefs when it comes to this stuff. Rather than being told exactly what it is, I'll just give you a hint, as accurate as I can get it, and send you off into the right direction to do your own research and figure this stuff out on your own. But yeah, you know, you're always a step away from nihilism when you don't have a proper belief. And your morals get skewed, and you stop really having proper reasons to exist. Like, there's no higher power or higher reason or higher purpose guiding you through life. And so you end up just moving like a I don't know, man, like a sponge floating or some shit. Do sponges even float? Do sponges even float, man? Anyways, yeah. So, I remember back like a year and a half ago, I had a talk with my dad, and he told me that there's four aspects that are very important when it comes to just living life. Four pillars that you gotta have unlocked to have like the complete human experience, right? To have it right. And that was physically, you gotta be right, you know, get healthy, get fit. Mentally, you know, you gotta be smart, decently educated about stuff. Financially, you need that money or else you're gonna die. And spiritually, you need to have a proper connection with what's above. You don't have to be like hardcore religious, you know, super obeying and all that stuff. I mean, we're humans. We make sins, you know, we're fallible, if that's even the word. But just have a steady belief in something. Like, have a foundation or have it fundamentally built into you that you believe in something out there, right? And I feel like he's right. He was right when it came to that stuff. And so, now that you kind of know the purpose of this video, which is to help my generation and my people get in lock with the divine side of things, I'll share my story, my experience thus far. And I hope that can help the rest of you guys figure something out. Because I believe I can make a change, be it very small in one person's life or like 50 million people's lives. So, yeah, I know this video is going to help someone out there. Like, at least one person is going to walk away from this video being like, holy shit, bro. Damn. And have their whole life's trajectory changed because of this. So that's good enough for me. Yeah, so I was born into a very religious family. Okay, not very religious, but religious enough. You know, my grandpa was like a archbishop and all that stuff. So there was decent religion in my family, especially on my mom's side, right? But yeah, and ever since I was young, I remember hating church. I absolutely hated it. I despised church with a burning passion. Two things I hated a lot in life. That was school and church. I hated these things so much. Man, bro, let me tell you. I once asked a friend of mine, an upperclassman, to break my leg so I could have an excuse to go home and not stay in school. I went to a boarding school, like a boys' boarding school. And one time I was so fed up with school, I just hated it. I was like, bro, break my leg for me, please. And he was really about to do it. And I was ready. I was actually ready, man. I was dumb. I think I was 13 or something. So it comes with the age. I was really about to let this nigga break my leg so I could go to school. So I could go home. I remember one morning, it was morning prep. If you don't know what morning prep is, it's this thing where in boarding schools, you have to study in the morning and prepare for classes. So you study before you study in classes. It's crazy stuff. And we wake up at like 4:30, go to classes 5 and have to study up until 7, and then breakfast and then class again. So that time in 5 a.m., I was headed to morning preps, and I hated this because I love sleep. And I would end up sleeping for like 6 hours at most in school, which heavily stunted my growth and stuff like that. And so I remember walking up the stairs, man, going to class, and I just hated it. Every morning I dreaded that walk so much, man. I hated it so bad. It was the cause of like heavy depression in the morning, man. And so I got up to my class, and there was a balcony because my class was like on first floor, the floor above ground. And there was a balcony there, and I was like, dang. I laid across against the balcony, and I started staring down onto the parade ground. I was like, I could just jump. And for a second, I seriously considered jumping so I could land, fuck some shit up, and have to go home because of it. It wouldn't have killed me. It would have messed some shit up, though. So that just goes to show how much I actually despised school. And church was the same. I hated going to church in the mornings. Maybe because I had to, like, sacrifice sleep, I think. But I also remember that I just hated it because I couldn't understand it. See, I was fortunate enough to go to an international school for a primary. So that means that culturally I was raised very differently, especially in school grounds. And they taught English really well, but Swahili, which is my native language, was pretty dookie. And so compared to my other friends who didn't go to international school, my Swahili was whack. And so even in church, it just never clicked with me. I didn't resonate with the language at a younger age. Now I'm much better at it, but that's just what's up. And so that contributed to my hate for church. Look, I know a bunch of y'all watching this probably think I'm demonic or something. I'm sure there's at least one person who's like, demonic, click off. Well, yeah. But, you know, that's one person. I'm pretty sure for the rest of y'all, you can relate, which is one of the reasons I'm making this video. Because I know for a fact 90% of y'all watching this can relate. My generation is just weird, bro. And I don't know why this is, but we just, I don't know. Church never resonated with me. And as I grew up, I realized that at the age of 18, just a lot of things changed for me. And my dad tells me this too, but I've noticed it myself, is I mature really quickly. And I don't know if I've always been maturing fast or it's just switched one day at like 16 or 18. I just started going through things and experiencing a lot of stuff that most people experience in their 30s or 40s and learning from them and, you know, just transforming because of that, understanding myself and having a lot of massive waves of just increment in self-awareness, you know, and seem to be becoming conscious of a lot of things very quickly relative to those around me. This is not like an ego boost or thinking I'm the shit, which I low-key kind of think I am, but but it's just a self-observation, and maybe it's happening with you too, you're just not aware of it. But I'm getting sidetracked. So because of this, I realized that at 18, it was 18, right? 18, maybe 19-ish. I think it was late 18s. I realized that, I'm aware of what I want to do in life, how I want to do it, how I want to live and how I want to move and, you know, how I want my interactions to be and just everything about my life. I kind of started to piece together. I kind of started to realize things. And the thing is, up until then, I had built my life around this. I had built my life around this different character. I was authentic. I wasn't faking things. But it was a different character than what I am now because back then I was just living life on free mode, I guess. I was just chilling. Like I'd imagine most of y'all are now, unless you've figured some stuff out about yourself. You know, I call it stage one. just like living, just existing. You know, I was just going out. Nothing wrong, by the way, nothing wrong with going out and having fun, getting messed up, wasted, whatever, depending on your priorities in life, that is, though. But yeah, I was just living life, you know, having fun, going out with friends, just existing, you know. And it was honestly some of the best days of my life, the memories that I made throughout this way, since childhood up until the age of 18. I was just living. I didn't really care about the future too much. I knew I was going to figure something out eventually. But yeah, I was just existing. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was just having fun, enjoying my late teens and all that. And then boom, suddenly it changes. It just really changes. And I start to figure some stuff out. And this affected a lot of things in my life, relationships, especially with friends and partners and all that. But it just kind of happened where I figured some stuff out about myself. And I realized what my true authentic self was. And to pursue this version, this true authentic version of myself, I've had to make a lot of changes in my life with, you know, social circles and just goals and beliefs and all that. Just everything in general about me has had to change. And so from the past 2 years, I've grown a lot. I've matured a lot. My consciousness, awareness has expanded a lot. And I'd like to share that journey with you guys because I feel like it would inspire a lot of you guys to not be lost anymore, or at least to have some sense of direction in life. And I'm not going to be talking about like grinding and like getting your money up and discovering what you want to do in life so you can get money and be in a better spot financially. I think I spoke about that like a year and a half ago with my self-improvement video. So I'm not really going to be talking about that. I'm going to be talking about the spiritual side of things specifically, which I feel like is almost more important than this because that bleeds into your financial stuff and everything else in your life, and it just makes it all better. But yeah. So with that being said, at age 18, I had that conversation with my dad where he told me about the four pillars of life. And I realized that, yeah, I want to lock in with everything. So I made the video, the self-improvement one. I started self-improvement because I wanted to get my financials right. I wanted to discover my purpose and really go all into it, and just everything else. I wanted to get my entire life in order. And because I wanted to get my entire life in order, I started to dig deep into things. First thing was religion. I started to get really deep into religion. I started to try and figure it out. I started to really lock in with Christianity. I remember joining the praise and worship team. That was awesome because I loved singing. I remember that was the one thing I loved in church. The singing, the music, it was just amazing stuff. The energy in there would be awesome. And so I joined my praise and worship team for the English service in the morning. And I started doing that, and it was epic. It was just epic. I loved it. I loved practice. I loved performing in the band and everything. It was really awesome. I made a lot of cool friends too and everything. And I started to also try to figure out some other aspects of my life socially and all that stuff. But it was in this process when I joined the praise and worship team that I was really going deep into religion. I was really trying to just connect myself to God and understand Christianity better and actually be a real believer. Because like I said, 99% of the people I know, my age mates, my generation, aren't believers. They're just there. Like, and there's nothing wrong with it. I was there too. And, you know, it's easy to be there because you're just told do this and do that. This is what it is. That's what it is. And you're expected to believe it from birth. You cannot question it. And we all have these crazy questions like, so what happens to the Muslims? And what happens to the Hindus? What happens to the Christians? We can't all be right. So who's wrong and who's right? But then what about those awesome people that aren't my religion? Are they going to burn? I mean, they're amazing people, but just because they've been born and raised into this specific culture and religion, they're going to be burned in eternal fire? That doesn't make sense. We start having these questions, right? But then our religions and beliefs will tell us, don't question the Lord above. Don't question these things, you know? His logic is beyond yours, so yeah. And we're just left there with these questions, and we have to suppress them, and we're left with a deep sense of dissatisfaction that can never be healed. It can never be. You go to bed thinking about these questions sometimes. Maybe like one time every 3 years now because we're so distracted with work and everything else. But you have these questions. If you really sit down and evaluate your religious beliefs, you have these crazy questions that cannot be answered that leave you with a deep sense of dissatisfaction that you have to hide under into your subconscious so you don't think about it for years on end. I think you got to face them, though. Regardless, I was looking into these things. I was asking questions. I was reading the Bible. I had a friend at the time who was really close to me, and he was very, what you would call born again at the time, very religious. And I'd consult him about a lot of these things. I'd consult a lot of people. And, you know, at times I started to feel like, yeah, my relationship with God was strengthening, but only in a form of understanding, not actual spiritual contentment. Like, there was still this deep sense of dissatisfaction. Like, you know, I just felt that. And so, instead of learning about Christianity in itself, like reading the Bible and getting deeper and deeper into the indoctrination, the beliefs themselves, I started to question them and do the research behind everything, behind the religions, behind Christianity, behind the beliefs that we've been put on and why they've been put on to us, and history and the very beginning of humanity and just everything way back. I went deep. And see, the thing is, I have another channel where I do YouTube animations. So I spend most of the time, 6 to 8 to 9 to 10 goddamn 12 sometimes hours a day animating, just sitting there in my room drawing frame by frame. And so I listen to a lot of music, and when I'm not listening to music, it's podcasts. So on average, I'll spend 6 hours a day listening to podcasts, or 5. Over the span of 2 years, it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff. I've consumed a lot of hours, thousands of hours of information, audiobooks and stuff that I've dug into these things. And so what I'm about to tell you, even though it may not be in the best detail, it may not be as accurate in terms of numbers and specifics, because I mean, this video is going to be 6 hours long if I did that. And also because I'm still learning. Whatever it is I'm going to tell you, it's not accurate in terms of specifics, but it's accurate in terms of the direction you should take. So if this stuff does end up interesting you, then just look into it and you'll get your answers there. But I've just done a lot of research into these things ever since I started like questioning this stuff. and it's led me down some pretty crazy rabbit holes. So, first thing, again, I'm not going to talk about things in detail. There's so much stuff. This stuff goes so much deeper with so much evidence that it's just undeniable. But I'm going to start with what I've been learning. And disclaimer, warning, kind of, the stuff I'm going to tell you, once you actually dig into it, depending on how firmly cemented your beliefs are in, you know, the typical monotheistic religions and stuff, it might mess you up. Because sometimes it's hard to let go of these beliefs and things, but once you actually look at the proof, and that's the thing about truth, that's the thing about evidence, is that once you look at it, you kind of can't avoid it. You can't. You may push it down, but you'll go to bed and you'll think about it at night before you sleep. Because you know you can't really argue against logic, not when it's staring at you in the face, you know, truth. So, yeah, tread cautiously if you're listening to this podcast or watching the video, but here goes. So, I mean, most of the stuff is, some of y'all might already know this, but the sheer amount of people that don't know this is disgusting to me, and I was one of them, so I totally get it. But I'm going to talk specifically about Christianity. I've realized in my research that monotheistic religions, religions that preach in one God, are really skewed, completely wrong, honestly, in most of their, you know, words and stories and stuff. And I wouldn't even say they're wrong. They have a lot of truth in them, a lot of truth. And, you know, I'm not going to discredit things like the Bible and the Quran. Again, I don't want to, I do not want the backlash that might come from this. But this is just my personal experience. They have a lot of truth in them. And I'm going to talk specifically about the Bible and Christianity because that's what I've delved into the most. But, you know, like, it has a lot of truth and it's correct in a lot of, like, the moral compass things. But the details in it have been so skewed that it's just might as well be a full lie, you know. Monotheistic religions, Abrahamic religions, they're not it. Polytheistic religions, however, stuff like Hinduism, things like Buddhism, these things come a lot closer to truth. From my research, these things come a lot closer to what I regard as the truth. They have a lot of truth because if you really think about it, back in the day, Christianity and these Abrahamic religions are very new. Before that, people believed in Buddhism. Before that, people believed in Hinduism. Hinduism is the oldest religion in the world. And if you really look at it, it's not a religion. It's more of a way of life, Hinduism. It's not a strict religion, you know. And Buddhism, same with it. I wouldn't even call it a religion. More like a way of life. Religion in itself, I feel like, is a big problem. Digging deeper into the research, I realized that, oh man, Christianity was not spread through the gospel and the good news and all that stuff. It wasn't. It was spread through something called the Inquisitions, if I'm correct. I might be wrong with the word, but I think it was the Inquisition. Probably the biggest genocide to ever happen in the history of humanity. 80 million people slaughtered and killed. Tortured in horrible ways, man. If you go to, there's this museum in England that has these torture devices that they use. So what they did was the Roman Catholics just decided to traverse the entire world and find all these cultures, indigenous cultures in Africa, Americas, wherever, whichever country they went to. They will find these cultures, take their chiefs and tell them, hey, look, man, your faith, the stuff that you believe in, that's a bunch of BS. You gotta listen to our stuff. If the chief said no, you know, because the chiefs would sit there and read their Bible and read the things that they're being introduced to, and they'd look at him and say, nah, I'm sorry, man, but we're gonna listen. We're gonna believe in what we believe, you know, the traditions that we have. The Romans would then say, fuck you, nah, and then, you know, torture them. In, like, murderous ways, man. They torture them in gruesome ways. There's, like, a museum, like I was saying, somewhere in England that has the torture devices that they'd use, and they are insane. There was this thing that they would shove up a woman's private area and then turn the wheel so that it could start opening up and destroying her from the insides until she died. They would do these things, man, to everyone who resisted the good news, Christianity. And they forced it. They forced it into people, into these cultures, into these traditions. And they slowly indoctrinated entire generations into believing in what they wanted them to. The first generation would resist, but then their kids would be born and see it as just how it's been from the get-go, and then they'd tell their kids, and their kids would tell their kids, their kids would tell their grandkids, and it would be passed on until a point where we're born into it and we have absolutely zero question for it. But see, the thing about things that aren't true is that you'll always question it. It's like, I feel like if this was the way things were, then we'd absolutely have zero questions. But you're born into religion, and from the jump, you have these questions. They die down as you grow up because you get so indoctrinated, you form these belief systems into the fact that, oh yeah, this religion that I'm born into is the truth. But as a child, you've always been asking these questions because something didn't add up. And these questions you still have within you, questions that still haven't been answered, questions that still don't add up, but we've just suppressed them. And so Christianity was spread through murder. It wasn't spread through the good news or anything like that. I figured this out and, oh man, I'm hungry as shit, I just realized. As I do this research, I start to realize what the Bible really is. And what the Bible is it's a remix. It's a collection of, texts that predated way before. Because the texts from the Bible, if I'm not mistaken, were collected 6,000 years ago. That's why most people who believe in Christianity and the Bible believe that the earth originated around 60,000 years ago, 6,000, even though they don't specify it, that's just because that's when they collected the texts. Like, that's when they started finding these texts. And around 2,000 years ago, the Council of Nicaea, which was a council that was the guys that basically collected the scrolls and stuff that they would find in caves and everything. They collected all these different books, scrolls, papers, papyruses and stuff, and put them together and decided to create the Bible. And the Bible has various different versions. You know, there's the original one in Hebrew, and then it keeps getting changed and stuff up to the King James Version and everything. But the Council of Nicaea literally had the power to change and alter whatever it is that they want to. And what they did is they collected the Bible, they took out certain books like the Book of Enoch and stuff and all this stuff and put in their own books and altered some words and altered a lot of words, actually altered a lot of texts and everything and did all this stuff. Now you got to sit there as a Christian or as a believer and ask yourself, why would they do this? What are they hiding? And I've heard this thing that people tell me when I tell them that, yo, this happened with the Bible, you know, and they're like, yeah, we know it's been changed and been altered, like. But anyways, what I was saying is you got to ask yourself, why is it that they would change the original texts? If the texts were meant to preserve information for the future generation, why would they omit some of these texts and add some of their own? Well, some Christians would say, hey, they did it so that they could protect us or give us the right information, take out what seems like it could damage society. But isn't that up to us for our interpretation? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why don't they let us interpret these texts for ourselves and then make an educated decision as to what's right and what's wrong, right? Who are they to extract these things? I mean, sure, there's a good chance they might have had good intentions, but I don't think the same group of people that slaughtered 80 million people to spread this ideology had good intentions when they were altering texts, right? I don't want to get too deep into that rabbit hole. That's for you to look up and discover. I'll leave a lot of sources for these things down in the descriptions and in the links and everything. But yeah, you just got to get skeptical about that. But we haven't even gotten to the, like, to the bread of it yet. So this is just the fact that it's been altered and the Bible originates from texts that were discovered 6,000 years ago. The thing is, all these texts are actually, most of these texts are actually tens of thousands of years older than the Bible. They predate the Bible. They are like 10,000 years old, 20,000 years old, 30,000 years old texts that this Bible has basically ripped off of. The Bible is a whole series of just plagiarized material after plagiarized material from texts that predated by tens of thousands of years. I think Noah's Ark is the Legend of Gilgamesh, copied from ancient texts way older than the Bible, and every other story in the Bible, 90% of the stories were completely taken from older texts and remixed. They added their own things, added their own names, omitted some parts, and added their own parts to suit their agendas. And boom, so does the Bible that we know today. You go around and you discover that, wait a minute, the Bible has been copied from ancient texts texts that predate the Bible by far, and texts that tell mainly a completely different story, and you realize that the Bible is a big remix, a bunch of edits of ancient texts. Naturally, if you're someone like me who likes to dig deep and find truth in things, you'll start to look at the ancient texts. There's a lot of amazing books about the past that, honestly, like I said, I'm still a student. I'm still learning these things. I haven't looked into the texts themselves, but I've seen a lot about them to at least be able to show you the right path if you get interested in this sort of stuff. But books like the Epic of Atrahasis, the Myth of Adapa or Adamu, and the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. What else? The Sumerian Ancient Tablets. And stuff like this, this is where most of the stories in the Bible originate from. Some even spanning from the Indian texts, like from the Bhagavad Gita and the Indian Vedas. All of these texts predate the Bible by a long shot, and if you look at the Bible, it's basically a compilation of everything. This just comes back full circle to my point that the Bible has been used to psyop us, because these ancient texts actually contain the real wisdom, the real knowledge about how reality works, our origin, and how we can basically bend this reality to our will, and how we can have the most out of this life. But the elites and the guys who, you know, just created and enslaved us using this monotheistic religious system have taken advantage of that, edited the entire piece of wisdom, given us a hint of truth with a boatload of salt and lies, and here we are, worshiping it and dedicating our entire lives to it. No wonder why this place seems like hell sometimes, because we're not even doing it right. So, I am gonna get into the actual stuff. I feel like before I tell you guys what I've been on and the actual practical parts of it, I gotta give like a slight history lesson as to what, how we really started, like our actual origin. And I assure you, this is 100%. Okay, not 100% truth, because no one can ever really know the truth. We don't really know the truth, but this is about as close to the truth as we can possibly get. And I urge you to not just take my word for it, but rather listen to what I got to tell you. Look into the links, get sent to the directories, and do your own research and figure this stuff out on your own. And listen to people who are more qualified than I am, because like I said, I'm just trying to spread the word. I'm not really the guy. But yeah, just do your own research if you're interested, and you'll be amazed by your findings. But if we go back to some of the oldest texts known, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and I think the Sumerian tablets speak about this too, also the Epic of Atrahasis. I'm not too sure with the books exactly. I'll link them all down below and you can figure that out. But the story goes like this. What really happened from these texts that predate the Bible by far? Some of the oldest texts ever known to man. It sounds hella science fiction. But the fact that these pieces of text, stone, and tablets have been carbon dated to tens of thousands of years before the Bible and before what's regarded to be modern civilization has to leave you wondering, who's sitting there writing science fiction like 30,000 years ago? You know, it's crazy stuff. So the origin of humanity, how do we start? I'm going to give you a little history lesson. Around 450,000 years ago, there was a war, an interplanetary war, just like Star Wars, out in the, what's the star system called? Out in the Pleiadian star system, if I'm not correct. Some solar system thing far, far away from here. In this war happened to be a bunch of aliens, a bunch of different like species of aliens and all that stuff, and they inhabit other planets. There's other civilizations that exist out there, and during this period, 450,000 years ago, happened to be a great big war, and they had this one specific weapon called the Brahmahanda weapon, and this weapon was known to be able to destroy any man on three worlds. It was blowing up planets and all that stuff. It's crazy stuff. And I know, look man, I know how absurd this sounds. I'm literally like 20 seconds in, but take it from me, this is also one of the reasons why I felt like I should put this out there. At least to the people that know me, it's like, I feel like things always sound more reputable when you hear it from someone you know, rather than from like some random guy on YouTube or some podcast or some audiobook somewhere. But from someone you know whose background you're kind of aware of, or at least have been following me for a minute, you know. I'm just like you. I used to be like a full-blown Christian, just like you who's a full-blown Muslim or whatever. And here I am. And I've had 2 years to think about this stuff and look into it. So once it gets to a point where I'm talking about this stuff publicly to the few of you guys that watch this, I actually believe in this stuff way more than I've ever believed in Christianity or anything else. And this stuff has actually helped me in my life. And it has done more for me in 1 year than religion has done for me in 19 years, ever since I was born. So maybe you should listen, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, shit, where was I? Man, I got bad memory. I gotta get more sleep, bro. So as this war is going on, these guys start getting decimated, because with the Brahmahanda weapon, much like nukes for us, but I assume way more powerful, it was wiping out entire planets. And these civilizations needed to find a way out. Like, they needed to figure out how to survive. And so what they did is they started leaving planets and going to other planets and completely different star systems and everything, and creating breakaway civilizations on those planets. And so these guys were basically like space refugees. If you think about it, they're going to different planets and doing all that. So what they did is some of them pulled up to our solar system and they landed on Mars. Now, we have these two characters that are very important, and that's Enki and Enlil. Now, Enki and Enlil happen to be the leaders amongst a certain group of aliens that ended up coming to our planet. Now, this term Anunnaki, if any of you guys have ever heard of it, Anunnaki is an African term referring to all the aliens, those who come from heaven, those who come down from heaven to Earth, the aliens that came to us a long, long time ago. It doesn't specify a specific race of aliens, rather just aliens in general, people who came from the Pleiadian star system. Kind of like if you were to go to Mars, you wouldn't tell them, yo, I'm from, I don't know, South Africa or whatever. You'd tell them, I'm an Earthling, I'm from Earth, right? Those are Anunnaki. And Enki and Enlil were, I think, brothers, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong with that. But Enki and Enlil were these two guys who basically ruled over, or at least were in command of, the entire squad of Anunnaki that pulled up to our planet. Now, what they did is they first pulled up to Mars. And when they pulled up to Mars, they had this other race of aliens who were inferior to them, in a sense, called the Ijiji. Now, the Ijiji, this is all in ancient texts. It's crazy stuff, stuff that's fine, like tens of thousands of years older than our civilization. So the fact that they are talking about spacecrafts and like breakaway civilizations and stuff, I mean, according to modern science, they shouldn't even know space exists. So yeah, these guys land on Mars first and they start terraforming Mars and making it a habitable place. But at the same time, Enki and Leel and the rest of the Anunnaki came down on Earth. They left the Ijiji on Mars to keep doing their heavy work for them. Now, the Ijiji, though being an inferior race, actually offered to volunteer to help build civilization with the Anunnaki, right? With Enki and Leel and his people. So they stayed on Mars and kept doing that work. And while the rest of the guys, Enki and Enlil and his folks, pulled up down to Earth to, you know, terraform Earth and do their thing here. And so they came down. And see, the thing is, for 200,000 years, remember, we started 450,000 years ago. For 200,000 years, the Ijiji worked as slaves on Mars. And I think some of them were on Earth doing the work for Anunnaki, for Enki and Enlil. They worked as slaves. Even though they volunteered, they worked as slaves. And they started complaining because they were being mistreated. And their biggest complaint was they wanted women. they needed women. I guess they didn't have women at the time or something. And Enki and Enlil just weren't listening. And so what happened is they got mad one day, the Ijiji, and left Mars and came to Earth to start war, to rebel, because they were being mistreated fairly. I think this is also in the Bible, talking about soldiers or angels coming from heaven to fight man or something like that. It was from this story, right? It's all plagiarized, like I said. Can't give you details, but maybe eventually I will. I don't know. Regardless, though, they come down and they encircle where they discovered the first gold mine, And what's actually crazy about this is it's the first mention of it ever in history, this gold mine, Adam's calendar, in these ancient texts. And they date back to 200,000 years ago. They claim that this happened 200,000 years ago. Adam's calendar, where Enki and Enlil had their base, their camp, basically. And these Ijiji people flew down from Mars and encircled that camp, ready to wage war if negotiations weren't going to be made. And scientists or archaeologists carbon dated Adam's calendar, which is a real place right now in South Africa. And guess when it dates back to? 200,000 years ago. Bam. Magic. So it's crazy stuff, right? They encircle these guys, and Enki and Enlil pull up, and they didn't wage war. They got to a negotiation. I think it was Enlil's idea that said, okay, hold on, wait a minute. Let's do this instead. Since you guys don't want to work for us anymore, there is an existing hominid around here, right? A being on this planet. We could take that and add our essence to it and create a working slave, like a working class being that could work for us and do all our hard work. And you guys, the EGG, will be free to do whatever you want. And they thought that was a banging idea, and so that's what they decided to do. Now, what they did is, there was a woman, one of the Anunnaki, one of the aliens. There was a woman. Her name was Isis. And they decided to have this idea where they do in vitro fertilization, take the sperm of the existing hominid here on Earth, and have Isis, the Anunnaki woman, the alien, take it to term and give birth. They were talking about artificial infertilization, in vitro fertilization, whatever it's called, tens of thousands of years ago. Technology that's only been recently discovered by us. Isn't that crazy? Doesn't that kind of, you know, get weird? So these guys knew some stuff, man. These guys knew way more than we currently do right now. So they basically decided to create their own working class being to do all the work for them. Now, keep in mind, these aliens were way more technologically advanced than we are even today, far surpassing anything that we could even conceive today. And so these guys decided to do it. What they talk about in the ancient tablets is that there was an existing hominid here on Earth, and this was us. This was our cousin, not the modern day Homo sapiens sapien, but Homo sapiens cousin. It was weird. It was one of these pre-evolved versions of us. And what they say is that these guys, although may have not have been as intellectually intelligent as we are, they were way more in touch with nature, their environment, and spiritually. You know, these, I don't know, man, these guys could probably phase dimensions or something. I don't know. But they were more in touch with nature and everything, and more in tune spiritually, and just intelligent in a different way. Just not as evolved as the modern man. So what they did is they took this. They actually did a few experimentations at this place called Eden. The Eden, not the Garden of Eden. This Eden place was actually a lab, a giant lab area guarded by, is it Enki? I get these guys' names mixed up. By Enlil and his guards, I think. And they did a bunch of experiments with different beings and stuff until finally Isis took this pre-evolved cousin of ours and took its sperm, took it to term for 10 months, not 9 months, and gave birth to the very first human being called Adamu, not Adam, Adamu, or Adapa, the Adapa, meaning the first man. And actually, this is the exact reason why in the Bible, I think it was Cain who was banished by God from Eden, and he says, but they're going to kill me. And then God says that, no, I'll put a mark on you. Who's they? Who's they if these guys, Adam, Eve, and his children were the only humans around? There was other people. And the Bible, I don't know if they forgot to leave that out or to take it out. I don't know what that's all about. But yeah, there were other people here before Adam. Adam was just the first anatomically correct human who was made infused with Anunnaki DNA. Now, the thing with these, with Enlil, is that he's not really a good character. And Enlil was a very evil dictator. And most of the time, especially in Genesis, when they talk about God, they're actually talking about Enlil. I don't want to get controversial regarding the religious stuff, even though I think I may have burnt that bridge a while ago. But yeah, Enlil was very evil, and he'd kill humans by the hundreds of thousands whenever he felt annoyed and stuff like that. These Anunnaki guys were not just technologically superior to us even in the modern day, but they also were spiritually superior to us, and they were just aware of the universe and its inner workings and could manipulate time, matter, space in ways that we can't fathom today through mixing technology and spirituality and things like that. But what they did is they made us inferior to them. They created us, and Enlil specifically, as he was in charge of this process, created us and made sure that we were inferior, took out a bunch of our DNA and locked it down so that we would be shells. We'd be operating at like 5% of our true capacity. Now, in the process of the rest of us being made, what Enki did, which is Enlil's brother, the good guy. Enki's actually a good guy. What Enki did is, I think he snuck in and again, the details are just, there's a lot, man. There's a lot to this stuff. I cannot unpack it here. But Enki, what he did is, during our creation process, he did something to us to allow us the potential of surpassing even these Anunnaki guys and just being able to achieve much, much more. And once we were made, when Enlil found this out, he was furious, because the snake that they talk about in the Bible, that's actually Enki. And you should understand that every ancient civilization before the Christianity, biblical, Abrahamic religion started spreading, acknowledged the snake as a symbol of wisdom, knowledge, health, and understanding. That's even why the caduceus, you know, that snake swirling around the cross and all these healthcare organizations, that's what it symbolizes, and that's why it's there, because the snake actually represents knowledge. And it was talking about Enki, and Enlil's brother, who pulled up to Adam and told him, hey, you guys are being slaves, this is the truth, and gave Adam knowledge and understanding of who he really is, his capability as a soul, his eternal nature, you know, transcending the physical limitations of this three-dimensional world, and all that stuff, and just explain to him how he's being a slave or being enslaved, and we are able to surpass even the Anunnaki themselves because of something that Enki did, altering the whole process of creating us in the first place. And so once Enlil found out that this knowledge had been passed to Adam, he was furious, and, you know, crazy stuff went down. In fact, the Tower of Babel, I forgot what the actual story was, but it isn't even called the Tower of Babel. It again, been copied from much older text that speaks about how humans were developing really fast at one point, closing into the Anunnakis, and Enlil got really mad, and that's how the whole Tower of Babel incident happened, when he pulled down and stripped us of a lot of our abilities, mixed up languages, and all this stuff. Crazy stuff, man. When you look at science today, they have realized a couple things. They've realized that in our genes, like our genetic material, our DNA, there's a lot of stuff called junk DNA. Now, I think scientists, at least the people high up, know what this junk DNA really is. They're just not going to tell us, because why empower us, right? They're trying to control us and enslave us and all that stuff. But what our junk DNA really is most likely all the abilities that we had prior to being suppressed and modified by the Anunnaki, the ability to leave our body, the ability to bend and manipulate time, space, and stuff like this, stuff that you see these spiritual masters, yogis, and guru out there levitating on top of the Himalaya mountains and stuff, that type of stuff. We could all do that. We still can. It's just hidden as junk DNA. It's all dormant because of what the Anunnaki did. Another thing is, in the Bible, when God says, I will give Cain, it was Cain, I will mark you as you know, I'll give you my mark so they don't kill you. What actually happened is science has realized that race, you know, the fact that I'm black and you're might be white, Asian, Chinese, whatever, could not have happened over the span of 200,000 years, which is the time they approximate having us modern humans been around for, which is, you know, the exact time the Emerald Tablets and the Sumerian tablets speak of us being genetically engineered by these Anunnaki. 200,000 years of time and existence cannot lead to such a huge genetic variance that would cause a difference in skin color like this. So the whole thing where it's like, oh, you know, Africans are black because they spend time in the sun, and white people are light because they didn't get burnt by the equator and stuff like that, it's not true. That's not really why it happened. What happened is, when these Anunnaki came down, they would mark their people. And this mark that God said he'd give Cain was race. Mark him so he can look like the Anunnaki. And like I said, the Anunnaki was a wide range of different beings from different planets. They didn't all look the same. But where they landed first was the land of Kem. And the land of Kem, which is now known as Egypt, Kem short for Kemet. And that's where all this Eden stuff was happening, and all the Adam stuff and the creations of all that. That was all happening in Kem. I actually forgot to say this, bro. I am such a bad elaborator. Talking to the camera is different, bro, from when I'm talking to, like, people in real life. So bear with me. But Jesus Christ, yeah. They landed in Kemet, and the guys, the Anunnaki that ruled over Kemet, were black. They are the original black people. They look just like us. They are massive for the most part. They could alter their size, shapes. They could alter their heads and stuff. But they were black. And a lot of the paintings and hieroglyphs you see in Egypt about the Egyptian gods were pretty accurate. Only it wasn't actually gods. It was just Anunnaki beings. See, the thing that these Anunnaki didn't want us to understand is that they are just like us. They were flesh and blood people. Just that it was a different civilization, a different part of the universe that understood things and had a head start from us, thus developing and growing faster and more advanced than us technologically. So what they wanted was, what they did actually was, they would mark us with races. This is why if you take a look at every ancient tradition across the entire globe, it all revolves around people worshiping beings, a lot of gods and goddesses. They all look different. Some of them are red. Some of them are blue, like most Indian deities. Some of them are black or brownish, like the Egyptian ones. And some of them are, honestly, I don't know about any white beings. I haven't seen, but I'm sure they exist because that's the whole reason white people exist. This is the thing. We were all marked, and we were marked by having this color, this race imprinted on us, representing that we belong to these Anunnaki beings or those Anunnaki beings. That's why Asians are Asians, and that's why black people are black people. The aliens that made us marked us with their own races. We resemble our creators. It's crazy stuff. We were made in the image of them, but they are not gods like the Bible or other religious texts would have you believe. They were just people, literally flesh and blood people with some messed up ideology, same as we do. They brought war to us. They also brought music to us. They brought technology to us. But, you know, they also brought everything else that has been the downfall of us since the dawn of time. And so with that being said, science has caught up to this. They were curious. They were like, there's no way this type of genetic variance can happen in 200,000 years. And so what they did is they traced it back to when this change happened. And they discovered that it was a very abrupt change that happened exactly 200,000 years ago. Something altered our DNA and gave us these variances in race and stuff. And guess when the ancient texts say this happened? 200,000 years ago. Mad, right? Mad stuff. That's not the only thing, actually. Science has also figured out that there is a thing in our systems called a worship gene. Now, the worship gene is, I guess it's a gene in your body that can be turned on and off. When it's turned on, humans get this compelling sensation to just worship things that are outside of them. But once it's turned off, we tend to look within and worship that which we are. It's crazy. And this just explains some of the tampering that's been done to us by the Anunnaki beings. So that's what they did. They came here, they created us as a workers race and ruled over us and used things like altering our genetic. They introduced religion, specifically monotheistic religion. When you say Amen, you're actually giving thanks to Amun-Ra, one of the most evil dictators to ever rule our planet. Was also an Anunnaki being who ruled for thousands and thousands of years over Kemet, which was Egypt, which was Africa basically at that time. And these are also the people we call, or you call, Atlantean. The Atlantean civilizations just refers to the Anunnaki, specifically the ones that landed in Kemet, Egypt, Africa. They brought a lot of things to us, man. They brought a lot of civilization and all that, you know, a bunch of good stuff, but also a bunch of bad stuff. They taught us how to do war. They brought beer to us. They brought music, art, all of these things that they introduced to us. They also gave us technology, taught us how to build things, made the pyramids and all that stuff. But eventually something happened, and about 12,000 years ago, the floods actually happened. The floods that are being spoken about in the Bible and stuff and in religious texts actually did happen. And for a long time, mainstream science was denying this, but, you know, it can't be hidden from the public for too long. And the good thing is that all this stuff is becoming hella mainstream these days. I feel like within the next 5-10 years, if the world doesn't go south, then this is going to be common knowledge everywhere. But we've just been psyoped on purpose, so we don't understand these things. But, the floods really did happen 12,000 years ago, and the Anunnaki left, and this guy, this very important guy called Thoth, who I believe was the son of Enki, again, my details are really messed up, but this legendary guy called Thoth, who ruled over Kemet for, I think, 16,000 years, came down to Earth And he builds the pyramids. The Emerald Tablets begin by him saying, "Builded I the Great Pyramids." He built the Great Pyramids. And this guy is, well, he's had a very profound impact on the world and civilization as we know today. I genuinely recommend you look into Thoth, because one of the oldest texts and most reliable texts, ancient texts that I've found is the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. Like I said, he was an Egyptian ruler and he ruled for about 16,000 years. He came down here after the floods had decimated the entire planet, nearly wiping out all of human civilization. And what he did is built the Great Pyramids and took a group of people called the Olmecs, gave them the knowledge on how to build pyramids and everything, and sent them around in order to kickstart civilization all over again. And he basically, you know, helped do that. And he taught these people how to, like, you know, grow again, how to develop again. And after some time, he left. What's crazy is that a lot of the words that Thoth said are exactly what Jesus says in the Bible. So either they copied what Thoth was doing, you know, they copied Thoth's texts from the Emerald Tablets, or perhaps Jesus really did say these words, and maybe he was some sort of reincarnation of Thoth. Getting out there, but if you start digging into these things, you realize how that's not a crazy idea at all. In fact, might be the only idea. The only idea? The only... Whatever, man. You know. Oh, and Jesus was actually a real person. He happened. His name wasn't Jesus. His name was Yeshua. Jesus isn't actually real. The word Jesus wasn't real, because Jesus in Hebrew, which is the original language, J doesn't exist. So his name was actually Jesus, but Jesus literally means Hail Zeus, one of the gods from Greece. And now that you already know that, all of these ancient deities that are discussed about in other religions were actually just Anunnaki people, aliens that came down from here and had advanced understanding of spiritual and physical technology, and thus we deemed them as gods like we always do. And his name was actually Yeshua. In fact, the whole J thing was added in the 1800s into the Bible. It wasn't there in the canonized text, I think. So, yeah, just more edits. But Jesus was real, and he's actually pretty awesome, man. It's very interesting, because Thoth in the Emerald Tablets talks about being able to reincarnate himself. He'd go into something called the Halls of Amenti, found down beneath the pyramids, which, fun fact, just like it has been written in the Emerald Tablets, science has done like a scan of what's underneath the pyramids, the Great Pyramids, and there's stuff in there, massive hallways that are bigger than the pyramids themselves. And this is where Thoth claims to have the Halls of Amenti, which hold immense knowledge in there. Of the universe, really, and everything that has happened ever since the beginning of time. He also specified that his ship resides under the left paw of the Sphinx, and again, science has checked it out recently with, I think, ground-penetrating laser technology. Realized that, hell yeah, there's something down there. There's something down there. So it's crazy stuff. But, yeah, who Jesus was? It's weird, because I genuinely think Jesus might have been a reincarnation of Thoth, as he was just born and immediately knew what's up. He left. He was debating the wisest rabbis at age 12 in Jerusalem, then just left for, like, what, 10 years? 20 years? I don't remember how long it was. 10 years? 18? 13? I don't remember, but he came back at, like, what, age 30? That was crazy stuff. He knew what he was doing from birth. So just like how Thoth says, he'd have these Halls of Amenti beneath the pyramids, where he'd go there and... like he would leave his current body, transfer his consciousness into another body, and live for another 100 years. I think he says he did this 10 times 1,000, something like that, 10,000 times. Probably why he ruled for 16,000 years and everything. So perhaps Jesus did the same thing, or maybe Jesus was, though. Anyways, I'm digressing really hard right now. What Jesus did, and what the Bible doesn't say, is that for his missing 18 years, look this up, Jesus went around different parts of the world. He went to England, he went to Egypt, he went to Tibet, he went to Japan, he went to India, and he went to these places to study the ancient arts. He went to Egypt to study the Egyptian mystery schools, which was started by Thoth himself. He went to Tibet to learn, I think, Qigong healing and Reiki healing, stuff like that. He learned meditation and all this stuff. And if you look at it, if you really look into this, what Jesus was preaching back in the day was not what the Bible talks about at all. Well, a lot of it is, But it's like they've taken all the important stuff and completely thrown it that out the window. Jesus was talking about meditation and energy and all this stuff. He was talking about a lot of the things you'd find in Indian texts like the Bhagavad Gita and Indian Vedas, a lot of the things that Buddhists and monks of that nature believe in. That's what Jesus was on. But it's been so heavily altered in the Bible, it's just crazy. Every time the Bible says God, it was actually gods with an S, referring to the Anunnaki, who again enslaved us and tricked us into thinking they're gods just because they were technologically more superior and advanced to us. This happens every time. When a person who's more advanced than what you've ever seen lands in front of you, you're going to immediately think they're gods. There's this thing called cargo cults, which happens to this day, where U.S. soldiers and U.S. people would like land in indigenous islands with indigenous people, that uncontacted tribes that haven't been contacted ever. They've never seen anyone else other than them. And these Americans would land there with their jets and stuff. And once they leave, these guys would treat them as gods. Like, till this day, people out there still tattoo their chests with the flag of America. They build straw planes, entire planes and dishes out of straw, and sit there praying to the sky gods so they can be brought fucking chips and chicken, you know? I'm not even joking. Like, this actually happens. They pray to the sky gods, the Americans, so they can come back one day and bring them food. It's exactly what we do here. It's just been so complicated. It's so complex now because of how long these systems have been around that they can actually trick us, because we've been indoctrinated into it. And you're going to tell your grandkid, and their grandkid's going to tell their grandkids, and it's going to keep going unless someone breaks the cycle. I'm not throwing shade at religion. I'm just saying it for what it is, man. And I think our generation has to get up and start asking some real questions. Now, I've just given a brief history, and I know I say brief, but it's been like an hour so far. A brief system, explanation of what that, you know, the history thing was. But now on to what I've actually been on and how this has actually affected my life for the better. About a year and a half ago, I got really into something called psychedelics. Now, you should Google psychedelics, but what they are is drugs, mind-altering drugs. But psychedelics are different from cocaine, meth, and all these other hard drugs. And the thing is, I went down a huge rabbit hole of just dead-on obsession of learning about what these things are. So I'm disgustingly educated on this stuff. I could write novels. I'm not proud of it, but it is what it is, man. So I learned a lot about these psychedelics, and what they are is they are mind-altering drugs with little to no side effects unless you have a very traumatic bad experience, bad trip, which can happen. But they say you get the trip you need, not the trip you want. But at the same time, they're anti-addictive. They actually cure addiction, and they're being used for therapy and being legalized like almost every month now in different states. Well, not really legalized, but they're legalized in some states, actually, in the Western world and stuff. But yeah, it's just they've been taking the world by storm. And what these drugs do, these, you know, I think you've heard about them before, magic mushrooms and acid, LSD, DMT, stuff like that. What these things do is once you take them, right, be it through oral ingestion or smoke or whatever, they expand your mind. They expand your consciousness. And you start to see things that you couldn't see before. But a common theme is that most people understand immediately as they enter the trip, which is the high, that you just know that these aren't things that aren't there. They're just things that you can't normally see. And these psychedelics are insane because they do a lot for people's mental health. They cure a lot of mental health issues and are actually being used for therapy quite a lot these days. But they also end up giving a lot of people a sense of enlightenment and just making people face their problems, deal with their traumas, and sometimes even embedding them with boatloads of information they didn't think was possible. And so digging deeper into these psychedelics and just looking into what they are and stuff, I stumbled across one special one called DMT. Now, disclaimer, I'm not like advocating for the use of drugs or substances of any sorts. Do your research and make sure it's legal in your state, man. It's not legal where I'm at, so. But still, it didn't stop me from learning about these things. I came across this one thing called DMT, dimethyltryptamine. This is a compound that is created in our brains. It's found in every living thing, all the plants, all the animals. It's being produced in your blood system right now, It's in there and it's produced, it's dumped in massive amounts when you're born and when you die. And people also speculate it might be responsible for dreams, though I'm not too sure how accurate that is. Still, it's insane. Now, what DMT is this stuff, I think, was mainly used by the Native Americans back in the day as a spiritual practice. DMT is not like other psychedelics, whereas for most psychedelics, if you take a small enough dose, you could have it in a party session, you know, a party setting, you could hang around with people, you could be social with it. But take enough of any psychedelic and it'll definitely have you feeling like you've left this dimension, literally. Because what happens when you take psychedelics is you start seeing things, like things, you know, things move, sounds are enhanced like crazy, music sounds profound and all this stuff, and your thoughts completely change into things that you never thought you could conceive in your mind before, and ways of thinking that you never thought were really possible if you take enough. Now, DMT is different because all you got to do is take 3 hits of this thing and you're instantly gone. What's interesting about DMT is that it doesn't feel like a normal psychedelic. Like, a lot of people don't even call it a psychedelic, but rather a tool. As I was saying, but rather a tool or a technology that can be used to catapult you outside your body and into super high dimensions. And what happens, what's so interesting about the DMT experience, is that you take 3 hits of this chemical that is extracted from, you know, tree bark or whatever it could be. Take 3 pulls, it knocks you out into slumber. You're not unconscious, though. You just close your eyes and you lay down, and your body becomes sedated, and you're like, you enter what seems like a dreamscape. What's interesting about DMT is that as it starts off, you close your eyes and you feel like you've been catapulted into this tunnel of colors that you've never imagined before, sounds that your brain cannot even comprehend, and you're thrown through this into a whole other dimension. You could land anywhere, but these places that people end up in have zero similarity to our reality or our dimension. They are incredibly detailed landscapes and terrains with colors, like I said, that you can't even imagine today. Fourth and fifth dimensional objects and things that transcend that, shapes that you can't imagine, you can't comprehend, you can't even compute in your brain. And all this just completely otherworldly alien stuff that you're launched into. Your ego, this character that you have, this character that you play, completely dissipates, and all that's left is your soul, your very being, you as the observer and not you as I, because the concept of I ceases to exist, and you're just there in this dimension. You can move around places, you can fly to different places. Oftentimes you just have to sit and observe the things that unfold in front of you. But it's not a drug experience. I wouldn't call it a drug experience, because this is a whole place. You could turn your head, look at a flower pot in this dimension, turn back, look at it again, and boom, there it is, the flower pot. It's crazy. Now, what baffles scientists to this day is the fact that when you do trip on DMT, you're gone for 10 to 15 minutes, and then you're back. When you get there, time doesn't exist. It ceases to exist in this dimension, literally. You could spend what feels like 1,000 years in there, though rare. That you could also spend what feels like a couple seconds in there, though it's been 15 minutes in the real world. Oftentimes, people come back feeling like it was way longer that they spent in there. What really baffles scientists is the fact that 90%, if not 99% of the time you trip, you encounter entities, beings in these higher dimensions. And these beings often seem, again, incomprehensible, infinitely detailed, massive or tiny, so abstract, because some could seem humanoid, some could be a literal 2D shape, some could be 8-dimensional beings full of light and energy, incomprehensible, made out of all sorts of fractal patterns and just this crazy stuff. And every time you encounter these beings, you always get a sense of just how astronomically superior they are to you in terms of understanding, and they're just their very being. They literally feel like God or gods, much more advanced than the Anunnaki and all that stuff. These are beings that reside in other dimensions. They always seem to just have an immense level of wisdom and understanding. And most of the times, these beings will communicate to you telepathically, and they will beam information to you, information that you can't bring back here, because this illusion, this matrix, this dream that we're living in would collapse, I guess. But when you're there, oftentimes you just seem to get a profound understanding of how everything works and what this really is. But then once you come back, you can only take so much. Oftentimes it gives people insights into their lives and what they got to do to fix it and all this stuff. But a lot of the times you get information that's just far beyond all of that stuff. And you come back here. And oftentimes it changes people's lives completely. They call DMT the Great Convincer. For anyone who's an atheist or anyone who finds the stuff that I'm talking about difficult to believe, or you know, just all this stuff, anyone who's stuck with religious dogma, take a couple hits of DMT and you'll be convinced. Easy. But then the people gonna tell you, oh no, it's demonic, bro, get out of here. But yeah, it's crazy. So I start looking into things like these, you know, just DMT, psychedelics, and all that stuff. And then, oh, and near-death experiences too. Those are insane. You know, people apparently die, literally clinically die. This happens a lot. Thousands of times it's happened and happens to this day. A loved one of yours has probably had this happen to them before, where they die, they faint, or they come close to death, or they completely clinically die, sometimes for minutes to hours. And once then they come back, you know, they just literally randomly come back, and they have the same accounts of sometimes lifting above their bodies, being able to see everything that happened, and, you know, reporting back what happened in more detail than those who were around can even remember, talking about how the paramedics arrived on time and all of this at a time where their brain should not have been working at all, no sensory input getting into the ears, nose, eyes, whatever. They should have been dead, but they come back with very accurate accounts of what exactly happened. And they also have crazy stories of similar experiences to DMT, where they went to a different world where they felt like their consciousness, their awareness expanded to way more than it is now. They met God, or they met a white light, or they met beings and had these crazy, just abstract, seemingly divine experiences out there, and came back with a greater understanding of life and their purpose and all this just crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff. What's crazy about DMT and these entities that people see in DMT and near-death experiences or high-dose psychedelic experiences is that they all are usually the same. Nearly everyone who's done DMT has seen this jester entity, which looks like a joker, and other entities that are just very similar. A lot of times you see Indian gods when you trip. You encounter them. And what's crazy about DMT is that everyone, or at least a lot of people, say it feels more real than here. It feels more real than real. Like when you trip, when you smoke this substance and you arrive in that other dimension, it doesn't feel like you're experiencing a drug. It feels like you're waking up from a drug or waking up from a dream. It's like, oh, this is where it's at. This is real life. And that was a lesser state of existence, a lower level of consciousness. Once you get there, you just feel like, oh man, this is really real, you know, or at least realer than where I was. And then you come back and it's just completely blown away every concept you had, every just belief system, all the belief systems you had about reality and what this is. And what's crazy is that a lot of people who end up there always report a huge sense of deja vu, like they've been there before. It always feels very familiar. I've never done it, but I got a disgusting amount of education on it. So yeah, very crazy stuff. I think a lot of these religious experiences that have been documented in religious texts and all is just this stuff. Most of these religious experiences are most likely the result of some sort of psychedelic experience that people have had. You know, they say that Moses's burning bush was possibly just the burning of the acacia tree, which is where DMT comes from. Well, like, it's a tree that emits a lot of DMT, or you could get a lot of DMT from that. So perhaps that might have been it. Either way, a lot of the angels and how they're described in the Bibles and certain texts heavily resemble entities that you'd experience when you do DMT and all these other things. What's crazy about DMT is that you meet the same entities as other people. You could be a kid born in Africa, you know, in the slums. You don't know what an Indian deity is. You don't know who Shiva is or none of this crazy stuff. You do DMT and you see him right there, and then you go home, you Google it, and there it is, Shiva, an actual being worshipped by a billion people. It's not a coincidence, man. It's not a coincidence. I just feel like we got to start asking questions and figuring things out. I don't know. So here I am, balls deep into this research of mine, where I start talking to my grandpa. You know, me and him, we have a lot of stories. He's really old. He's like 93 or something. Legendary guy, because he was like the arch, I don't know if I've said this before, but the archbishop, very first archbishop of like a huge church denomination here in my country. And so he's legendary, you know. He's done it all, met them all, seen it all. And very religious, very Christian, for obvious reasons. Now, one time, I remember one day he was really sick, right? Man, it's about to rain, so I don't know how much of the sound that's being picked up by the mic. I'm not using a decent mic. The other mic is like out there somewhere. So bear with me, man. I'm dropping knowledge anyway. So, man, screw you. Screw you if you complain about the quality. But yeah, what was I saying? Yeah. So I speak to my grandpa, right? And he's telling me the story about how recently he was sick. And I remember he was really sick because I wanted to visit him. And he told me he had mad diarrhea and stuff, like his gut was just going crazy. So he tells me that that night when he was sick, he was feeling so sick, actually, that he genuinely thought it was going to be his last day. He thought, I don't know if I'm going to wake up tomorrow. So he goes to bed and wakes up the next day. And then like a week or two later, I go visit him. And he tells me that night was no ordinary dream. He had a dream, but it was not ordinary. He says, first thing is it felt more real than real. Second thing is there was a lot of these fractals and geometry, ancient geometry that resembles these hieroglyphs and just, you know, these patterns on ancient buildings and stuff, because they all took inspiration from these altered states of mind and these dimensions that exist. They were communicating with these beings in other ways through drugs and, you know, spiritual practices, thus incorporating it into the architecture that they made. And that's why we see this stuff when we do heavy psychedelics. It's not made up by your mind. This stuff has been there, predates your existence here. Man, I sound so hippie, bro. It's crazy. Cannot believe this. Like, I can't believe I ended up here, man. But truth is truth, man. Where was I? So he tells me about this dream, yeah? And he says it was just that. He was floating in this place that felt infinite, felt timeless, like he's always been there before and always will be there. He'll go back to there. Felt very familiar. He didn't meet no entities, but when he came back, he said it gave him peace of mind and completely killed his fear of death, which is something very, like, something heavy psychedelics have in common. When you do a lot of heavy psychs or have a near-death experience, it completely gets rid of the fear of death, because right then and there is instant proof and just a gut knowing in your heart that this is not the end. Like, death is not the end. If that state of being is possible, then there is no way this is the end, you know? And I started talking to him about that, and I realized that, you know, because at the time it was perfect. I was really getting deep into researching psychedelics and altered states of mind. I then realized that I think he was close to dying. I think my grandfather had a near-death experience in his bed. Maybe his body, his soul left his body. Maybe it's just because he was in deep enough sleep and aware for some reason. Or perhaps he was actually getting close to death at that point, and it just wasn't his time to go, thus having a literal near-death experience. He doesn't share it with many people. Most people don't share it with many people because they're gonna get called lazy, labeled schizophrenic and psychotic, wishy-washy, whoopies, fucking hippies and all that, you know? That's why people don't talk about these things. But these things were embraced in ancient traditions. And the only thing that's changed is that we've been colonized and just murdered and forced into these monotheistic beliefs. But before then, we knew what was really going on. So I had this discussion about him, you know, about near-death experiences and all that, and he says it's likely to be that, you know. So fast forward a couple months, and I start to further my research, and I start getting into different religions and different beliefs, and I start really studying Hinduism. I start studying Buddhism. I start studying what the Mayans believed, what the Aztecs believed, what the Egyptians believed, what every other culture believed, especially what they believed before all this religious dogma, because you got to question yourself, like, if religion, monotheistic Abrahamic religions, were brought onto us mostly by violence and genocide, then it's very likely to be that that wasn't the truth. So if this is the case, then what is the truth? The next step, the only next logical step, is to look at what they believed in before we got messed up by these guys, before we were murdered, before we got to start looking at what happened before we were put into a state of genocide and, you know, indoctrinated with these modern day monotheistic beliefs. So I start looking into the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas, and looking into Indian spirituality, which is basically shared amongst most Eastern countries, most Eastern nations, Tibet, you know, with the Buddhas and everything, and Hinduism and all. It's, they're very similar in terms of practices and what they believe in. And it becomes very interesting because these guys do not talk about, like, spirituality in general. These beliefs, I realize that these religions are all really, not religions even, cultures and spiritual beliefs and practices that they had back and before these monotheistic religions. They all describe and talk about the same thing. It's just different names and different words and different ways of praise and worship, appreciation of the higher power. But they all talk about the same thing, point towards the same thing. Same thing the ancient Africans believed in, the Mesoamericans believed in, and the Easterners and the Westerners and everyone just back then before this shit show started believed in this. They all believed in the fact that, well, obviously they worship these deities, which we've now come to understand. We're just flesh and blood people, aliens from other planets and stuff that came here and had more tech. But they passed down this knowledge. They passed down this knowledge onto us, this knowledge that contains the understanding and, you know, just, yeah, these knowledges that contain the understanding of reality and how it works and how to manipulate this and what happens after death and before birth and all this stuff. And it was all the same stuff. And that's why every single culture believes in the same thing, at least pre-religious, right? Pre-religion, before religion happened. And it all talks about us being souls, us having souls. Now, the soul isn't this woo-woo thing that you're, you know, is a mystery to you and you're unaware of. The soul is literally you. You got to sit down and ask yourself, who's the person listening to my thoughts? Who's creating the thoughts? What's the voice inside my head? You come to an understanding that you are not your thoughts, but rather the observer. You observe your thoughts. You are that voice in your head. And once you start to figure this out, you start to realize that you are the soul, and it's not some inner secret, like, spiritual thing that you don't understand. It's literally you in your deepest sense. Once you, you know, leave your physical body, all that's left is that central point of awareness in here, located in the pineal gland, which ancients talk about a lot, and modern day science have still completely mystified by this part of our brains. But that's where, you know, that's where you are. That's your soul, I guess. I mean, not the gland itself, but a lot of our consciousness and awareness, I think, is located right here. Just look into the pineal gland. It's some very interesting stuff. It's also regarded to be responsible for DMT, for secretion of DMT and the experience itself. So it's crazy stuff. But yeah, they all talk about how we are eternal beings that exist forever. We've always been there, always will be. This earth, this third dimensional reality that we exist in, is nothing more than just an experience, a sort of dream that we've chosen to have. We chose to come here from a higher place to experience this reality, learn some lessons, pick it up, and then go. There is another side. There is life after death, but it's not heaven nor hell. You're not going to be judged by some guy in the clouds with a beard telling you that, you know, you stole from this person, so you're going to burn for eternity. That's not going to happen. There's other dimensions out there that exist, and there's something out there, a space, a void that exists outside of all of this, you know, beyond all the dimensions and everything, where we originate from. Call it source, call it God, because what they all believe is that consciousness, awareness dictates the universe. We're not put into the universe to experience it, rather we create the universe through the fact that we are aware. consciousness dictates the universe. The universe does not dictate consciousness / awareness. And that our bodies are simply just containers for this infinite sea, this infinite ocean of awareness and consciousness that is the point of origin of all things. And that we choose to deviate from this all-encompassing consciousness, the source of everything, to come here and experience these projections in 3D, 4D, and all the other dimensions that exist for the sole purpose of experiencing what it's like to be a human, what it's like to be a blade of grass, reincarnating lifetime after lifetime in different realities and different dimensions and different universes, and just experiencing this game called life. That's really what it is. That's really what it is. Now, I feel like I have to make a whole separate video about this stuff and what I understand about all this, you know, the dimensions and everything like that. But, you know, just a thing that you should keep in mind is the fact that you are infinite. You are just pure consciousness, pure awareness. When you die, you will leave this place. You will go through other dimensions, astral planes, etheric realms. You'll experience stuff out there too. But the moment you die and leave this 3D reality, which is very limited, our bodies are very limited, you know, because we really don't die, we don't age, we can do anything out there. Once you leave, you ascend to higher dimensions and keep experiencing more of that and get higher and higher and higher until you've left this entire experience completely and have merged back to source. That's a very brief explanation of it all. But one thing that I started experiencing is, you know, after figuring out and studying all these other cultures and their beliefs, Hinduism specifically really drew me towards it, because I realized it's as close to the truth as it gets. Hinduism talks about things that quantum physics is only now catching up. And what's crazy is that a lot of the most recent, most profound scientific discoveries about frequencies, vibrations, how they could use that to manipulate matter, how the pyramids were most likely made by sound and not random slaves being pushed up there, like it says in the ancient tablets, these discoveries that are being made today, these groundbreaking, like, just shattering discoveries, have all been spoken about in the ancient texts. The fact that reality is just a projection, a holographic projection of light, that this entire reality is. Quantum physics proves this by the string theory, demonstrating how when an atom is not being observed, it doesn't exist. It just exists as a wave of potentials. Only when someone is looking at these atoms do they collapse into solid matter. It's some crazy stuff out there, man. You know, the ancient texts talk about how everything is a frequency. Everything is a vibration. Quantum physics also understands that in an atom, it is 99.99997% empty space. All that exists is, I think, electrons or light or whatever that is. And so you could take the entire population of Earth and collapse all those atoms into one sugar cube, because nothing is actually there. All we have is just a bunch of vibrations and space and atoms and stuff. Yeah. So as I was saying, it got dark and I had to make some adjustments. But as I was saying, it's all really frequencies, vibrations, and light. That's really what our reality is. And it's very much like a dream. Nothing is actually here. We're just vibrating at this frequency, which is a relatively low one. Therefore, we experience this dimension, this plane of existence. But there's higher frequencies which your soul, your being can resonate with, and you can start to have these mystical experiences, which is what most of these religious experiences, psychedelic experiences, and near-death experiences are. It's mainly your soul leaving your body, and, you know, your soul, like I said, has no limits, so you can access anything, anytime, anywhere, and thus you start transcending into either higher or lower dimensions. And lower dimensions, quite frankly, are not that pleasant, at least not for the most part. And this is where the whole myth of hell and stuff comes from. There is no one spot that people burn in for eternity and all that. That doesn't exist. It's your own personal hell that your subconscious mind plays out for you once you die, if you end up going to lower realms, lower vibrations, all that. but you could also go to higher places. I'm saying this and it's all over the place, but I really just want to get everyone up to speed before I explain what it is that I have been doing. And so the last thing that we should understand is that me personally, like I said, I'm disgustingly educated with a lot of this stuff, but I'm also still learning a lot of this stuff because there's so much information out there that, you know, would have made our lives 10 times better had we known it from birth. One thing you should understand is that when we die, there's experience to be had after that. Lots of stuff to do with the astral realms and dimensions and traversing those. But at the end of the day, we should know one thing, and that is our true nature, the true nature of our souls. And that is, like I said, eternal, everlasting. Also, we can do anything, anytime, anywhere. Once you're done with this entire game of life and all these experiences and all the dimensions, once you really leave everything and step outside all these constructs, you as a soul will be back in a state of, well, a godlike state almost, where once you leave everything, you revert back to your true nature. All the knowledge of the universe comes back into your soul. Yeah, I think they figured out that DNA can store about 13.4 billion years of information. Very coincidental, because the universe just happens to be 13.4 billion years old. But yeah, when you're out there, your soul, whatever thoughts you have, they instantly manifest. So you can have any experience, even the unimaginable. You can imagine and create, and it will be just as real and more real if you want it than even this experience. Out there, we are gods, because we are all part of the same consciousness. Out there, these boundaries that separate us, these illusions that exist here on this three-dimensional plane, which we chose to come here and experience, those illusions disappear. That we are separate from each other, that we have egos, you know, all these misunderstandings and barriers and boundaries between us, it's all gone. You experience unconditional love from every single soul, and you become God in a sense. But then one thing that the ancient spiritual beliefs and traditions shared in common is that these ancient spiritual traditions all believe that despite us being literal reflections of God in our ability and just our existence, our true existence, because this dimension that we chose to experience has so many limitations, it's meant to experience that which we are not, the exact opposite of our soul's natures. That's why out there we can manifest instantly whatever it is we want. Here, we have to first start off as a thought and then put action behind it, believe in it, and have it happen. Out there is instant. Out there we understand that we are one, we are all pure consciousness, and we are all God, and this is just an experience we're having. Out here, we're born with amnesia. We don't know jack squat. We have egos and boundaries and barriers that separate us from one another. So yeah, it's literally the opposite of what we are, and that's why we came to experience this. One thing all these spiritual traditions have in common is that they all believe there is a creator. Even the Anunnaki and the ancient texts, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, and Sumerian tablets all talk about there being a creator. But it's such a mystery. We don't know what that is. It could be God consciousness, but maybe it's something above that. It's definitely not a he. Doesn't have a gender. I don't think it has human emotions. It's not the guy spoken about in the Bible or most Abrahamic religious texts, at least as far as I'm concerned. It's not a man with a beard who, you know, orders people, like in Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 13 to 14, to go murder other people, kill the men. In Samuel 1, chapter 2 or something like that. Check these verses out. He talks about killing men and women, men and children, I mean, raping the women, checking if they're virgins, and if they are, keep them as your wives. If they're not, kill them. Rape him. Talks about these things. And if you look at the ancient text and dig deeper, you realize that we know who these people are. We know who the God of the Old Testament was and who they're talking about and all that stuff. And it wasn't God, the creator of the universe. It was another man. Other men who were just far more advanced than we are. Other races of people from other planets and stuff. After learning all of this, after boring you for like an hour and a half with everything I've just said, the good parts. Dang, man, this lighting's weird.